delighted to welcome you to our courtroom this morning. We have a hearing on the petition to create a rule governing the discretionary transfer of cases to tribal courts. I think everybody in the room is aware, we had this issue of discretionary transfers for some time, having come to us through the tribal forum. And on July 31, 2008, we created 801.54, governing a discretionary transfer. And then there was an amendment to this in January we had a hearing, and then we had a revision in March 5, 2008, in an open administrative conference April 15, 2008, and we revised the draft as revised was adopted June 25, 2008 with dissent. It went into effect January 1, 2009, and in February 2009, Wisconsin Department of Children and Families submitted a letter asking the court to create a narrow exception to the rule to facilitate transfer of post-judgment child support cases to tribes under certain circumstances. The letter explained that the new affirmative notice and hearing requirements of the new rule were impeding the previously negotiated transfer of several thousand post-judgment child support cases to tribal courts that had existing federal approval and funding to develop and operate their own child support programs. This was pursuant to federal legislation. And the court did adopt that amendment in 801.54.2, recognizing that. And so 2M was created, 801.54.2M, to allow certain exceptions for this child support. And when we adopted this, we said that we wanted on or before January 1, 2011, to hear about the experiences. And so letters were sent out to interested persons to advise us regarding their experiences. And we have received letters from the Department of Children and Families, from the Forest County Potawatomi community, from Attorney Paul Stencil, from the Oneida Tribal Judicial System, from the Village of Hobart, and from the Wisconsin Tribal Judges Association. So we have today several appearances. I'll read them, and then if there are any others, we can advise the marshal. The Honorable Chip Nielsen, Circuit Court Judge, Vilas County. James Botsford, Wisconsin Judicator. Chief Judge Eugene Whitefish, Forest County, Potawatomi, and a National American Indian Court Judges Association. Winifred Thomas, a Chief Judicial Officer at Oneida, and the Honorable Mary Adams, Oneida Trial Judge. Are there any other people who wish to note an appearance? Okay, I'll call on Judge Nielsen, Vilas County.
Good morning, Chief Justice. Good morning, Justice.
Good morning, sir.
When I introduced the tribal judges at the last judicial conference, I did so by omitting a member, and at some risk of doing the same thing this morning, I'd like to take an opportunity to introduce to you the tribal judges who are in attendance this morning. With us is Judge Leland Nig Winham, who is president of
the... I wonder if each would stand,
please.
Judge Leland Nielsen.
Who is president of the Wisconsin Tribal Judges Association and a member of the Oneida Nation. Judge Winifred Thomas from the Oneida. Judge Mary Adams from Oneida. Judge Lois Paulus, also from the Oneida. Judge Robert Miller from the Stockbridge-Munson. Judge Eugene Whitefish from the Forest County Potawatomi.
Good morning.
Judge Richard Ackley from the Bad River Chippewa.
Judge Ackley is the judge who I overlooked at the judicial conference last year.
Judge Todd Matha from the Ho-Chunk Nation. Now, at some risk, is there another tribal judge that I overlooked? Good.
Wait, there's one.
Oh, there you go.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, but you weren't here when I walked into the room, so thank you.
Welcome.
Also present are several other members of the State Tribal Justice Forum, which I am pleased to chair. James Botsford from Wisconsin Judicare Indian Law Section. Paul Stenzel, Attorney Paul Stenzel from Shorewood, who is an ad hoc member of our group, and also Michelle Cyrillic from the Director of State Courts Office, who is of great assistance to us. The State Tribal Justice Forum did send a letter to the court. However, it was probably not received until Wednesday or Thursday of last week, and I apologize for the delay, and I don't know whether you've got that or whether you'd like me to.
Huh? The court has that. Thank you.
Okay. And my comments today, Chief Justice, are really about as brief as the letter. On behalf of the State Tribal Justice Forum, I am urging the court to continue the discretionary transfer rules in place. By all accounts from forum members and anecdotally, it is working well. There have been no instances that I'm aware of in which a discretionary transfer has been made to a tribal court over the objection of a non-member, and particularly none in which any appeal of that decision has ever been taken. Most of these cases are unopposed when they have happened, and as we expected as a forum, when this rule was proposed to the court, we knew that its use would be very moderate, that there wouldn't be a lot of these cases. Teague in itself was an unusual case and not a common occurrence, but what we wanted to establish was a situation in which we did not have to have two opposing cases filed, one in the tribal court and one in the state court, in order to look at the issue of transfer. Without 801.54, there wouldn't be any way to look at a transfer from a circuit court to a tribal court, even if the parties stipulated to that. And so we believe that the rule provides a simple mechanism. By all accounts, it's working. From what I can understand, I would say that the number of cases is very low. It's probably less than a dozen that I'm aware of, and we don't have a good way to put a firmer number on that. Now, there will be speakers here today who are going to address for you the situation in Brown County and the Oneida Nation regarding child support cases, which is a much more substantive use of the rule. There's a lot more going on there than there is statewide with the general discretionary transfer rule. And so on behalf of the forum, on behalf of the its members, we urge the court to continue the rule. I know it was set for this review, and I'm happy to answer any questions that any members might have.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Justice Brown.
Good morning.
Good morning, and to all of you who came from central and northern Wisconsin, you feel my pain, and I feel yours, since I live in Wausau, not as far north as many of you are coming and traveling to the court this morning. Thank you for your appearances. Some of the concern that's raised with regard to this rule is that it creates and gives inadequate information regarding the rights and procedures that are going to be used in tribal court, that it undermines the rights of citizens of this state who are not tribal members. That's kind of an umbrella concern. Can you comment on that kind of umbrella concern, if you have any comments, Judge?
I can't, in all honesty, say that the concern is not legitimate.
Yes.
There is, I think, always the potential for a bad decision to be made by a circuit judge in authorizing a transfer. I would indicate to you, Justice Bradley, that I think the parameters that are set forth in the rule provide a good overall guidance to circuit courts. And I can also state that I find it hard to envision a situation in which a circuit judge is going to transfer jurisdiction to a tribal court over a substantive objection that has a great deal of merit. I don't see that that's likely to happen. In one sense, the rule probably could have been could have accomplished 99% of what it now accomplishes by simply saying that after hearing and if no parties object, we would transfer the case to the tribal court when there was a concurrent jurisdiction and appropriate issues. Because I don't think it's a practical matter. It is happening, and I don't think as a practical matter it would happen over a substantive objection of any real merit. However, I know that when we look at the language used by the dissenters to this rule, that there's concern expressed about the trammeling of substantive rights of non-members and perhaps non-Indians with respect to a discretionary transfer decision. But I would note that a number of the cases that are cited by the dissenters, Justice Rogensack's dissent, cites a number of times the Plains Commerce Bank case. And even the opinion in that case emphasizes and confirms the fact that there is such a thing as concurrent civil jurisdiction and affirms the notion of tribal sovereignty and the right of tribes to have a judicial system. And so it's the mechanism of this potential transfer and how that jurisdiction is allocated that is of interest to us. And I think that the rule as drafted provides an adequate framework. I think that in almost all cases, we are dealing with situations in which there isn't that kind of substantive objection. But even if there were, I would trust Wisconsin's circuit judges to have the ability to look at those issues, including federal law issues, which we do in all kinds of other cases, and make the right determination.
Have you participated in discretionary transfers under this rule?
Once, or once and a half. If you want an anecdote, I'll give that to you.
Yeah, my concern was part of the rule says that the first thing the trial judge has to do is determine if there is concurrent jurisdiction. In my view, that's a very complicated question. And I was going to ask you, what did you do to determine if there was concurrent jurisdiction? So if you can answer it for one case, that's fine. But I'm interested in this hearing and getting more information. We didn't have any information about this when this rule was passed. So
you're interested in more information about how to ascertain concurrent jurisdiction?
I want to know what the trial courts are doing to actually ascertain whether there is concurrent jurisdiction. Yeah, that was my – I have lots of questions, but that was the
okay.
First one.
Well, most of the use of the rule in my experience and the information that I've received from other judges who have used it deals with family court cases, even excluding Brown County. And I don't think that there's any significant dispute that the tribal courts in this state exercise jurisdiction routinely over their members to adjudicate family law issues, to grant judgments of divorce. And our courts grant those judgments of full faith and credit. They've been up and running and have been doing this business now for 20 or 30 years. And the two cases that, the one and a half cases, I guess, that I've had did not involve family law. One was a situation in which our county or the state was prosecuting criminally a trespass where a tribal member had shot a deer on fee land within the reservation and then chased it over that land. The tribe does have an ordinance which adopts trespassing as a regulatory matter, and as part of an agreement, the state agreed to amend its charge to a county ordinance trespass. And then I determined that, on my motion, I said, well, why don't we give this to the tribal court? It involves issues that are of extreme interest to the tribe. They have an ordinance that deals with trespass. This is native hunting and fishing on reservation lands. Why should I be involved in looking at that? Let's let the tribal court do it. The parties agreed, and it was transferred.
So it was a stipulated transfer?
Yes, it was.
Okay. There is no right of review of a tribal court decision by the Wisconsin courts, correct?
Correct.
So if that matter was determined in tribal court and the non-tribal member didn't like the result, which in most court cases one person doesn't like the result, I mean, that's the way it goes, there really is no substantive right of review that you would have had in that case had it been tried in circuit court, correct?
There may very well be a substantive right of review, but
in the circuit court. I'm
not
talking about
court.
Tribal courts, I think, do a great job, and my concerns are not with that they don't do a good job. They do a very good job. My concerns here are the same as they would be for someone proceeding through our own court system where the tribal courts were not involved. They have certain substantive rights, okay? And those rights don't change. If they want to stipulate and go to tribal court, I have no problem with that at all. That's perfectly fine with me. My concern is about determining concurrent jurisdiction when there isn't a stipulation, and that concern is based upon an underlying problem in the lack of review, substantive review in the circuit court. In other words, if they didn't like the tribal court decision, they couldn't go to the Court of Appeals in Wisconsin, and they couldn't go to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Now, that's not to say they wouldn't have a very fine system of review, but it is a different system, and they do have a substantive right of access to our courts. And that's kind of what has bothered me on this throughout. So do you have any personal knowledge of anyone who has had a discretionary transfer into tribal court where there wasn't a stipulation on the transfer?
Well, I'm certain that has happened, or may very well have happened. I'm not aware of a situation in which it's been over any strenuous objection. I'm not aware of anyone who's taken an appeal from the decision which our rule would authorize.
Unless the cases that you're dealing with in family court are different than we see throughout the state, most people are not represented. So if the trial judge says you're going to tribal court, they're going to tribal court. Okay? I mean, the fact that there might not be an objection to me is not real persuasive.
I appreciate your concern. And again, to answer your concern and Justice Bradley's question, I don't know, and maybe others will speak to it today, I don't know that there's any way to create this rule and avoid that potential. But I don't think the potential is one that is significant in light of the benefit that's out there on the other side.
Well, you could create it by saying that the transfers are discretionary when both people agree. I mean, that would, right? Then.
And as I indicated, I think, in large measure, that would, as far as the way the rule has been used thus far, it would probably address, 90% or 99% of
those
cases.
But the rule does permit a discretionary transfer
over
against the wishes of a non-tribal member.
Yes.
And, Do you know if anybody that's going to testify today has any experience in this area? Discretionary transfers of a non-tribal member when they're not wanting to get transferred.
Yeah, there will be a little testimony concerning objections in Brown County, okay, where there specifically have been hearings.
Okay.
And I'm not aware of one, frankly, in another context. And if you want my half a case, my half a case was this. I had two gentlemen come into my office earlier this summer. They were members of the Bad River tribe. Uh-huh. They had contracted with the Lac du Flambeau tribe to do some work on tribal property in the reservation.
Uh-huh.
And they had specified by a proposal which they drafted and became countersigned, became the contract with the Lac du Flambeau, that the Lac du Flambeau tribal court would be the exclusive jurisdiction uh-huh. for any disputes. Well, of course, a dispute arose, and they came to me to seek an ex parte restraining order. They had already staged equipment and materials and expended quite a bit of money to commence their work, and then were told by some representative of the Lac du Flambeau tribe that the contract had been awarded to someone else. So they wanted an ex parte restraining order to stop the initiation of that other work. And I told them that, you know, I wasn't comfortable with the concept of an ex parte restraining order when they had indicated which forum was going to hear disputes. If that's your forum, that's where you should be seeking your relief, and, you know, perhaps there would be a way to entertain something if that all went bad, but I'm not promising anything. And so I sent them away, and that's the last I ever heard of it. So that's my half a case.
Okay.
I can't tell you more than that.
Yeah. Well, that's all of these things that are of great interest. When you were talking about the trespass before, unless I didn't hear you correctly, I thought you said it was a criminal matter.
It was, and then it was amended by the state. It was amended by the state. They didn't want to continue the prosecution as a criminal matter.
I got you.
So
okay.
It was amended to the corresponding county ordinance, so now we had two ordinances essentially competing, and, of course, the civil regulatory jurisdiction is generally exclusive with the tribe, I mean, basically, and I think we could have each exercised it, but because of the way it came to me, but we transferred it, and that was, again, something that was not objected to by either party.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other questions?
Judge Nielsen, maybe you could tell us, because the group that you chair, the Tribal Judges Forum, is supporting this, about the membership of that forum. I think that would be helpful to us.
The State Tribal Justice Forum is comprised of five circuit court judges, five tribal judge counterparts, and, again, several other ad hoc members, Paul Stenzel, James Botsford from Wisconsin Judicare. We did have Gary Sherman from the legislative issue, and I don't know that we haven't replaced anyone for Mr. Sherman since he took the appellate bench. So, but that is like an available seat as well. And so that's basically our group.
And your group does support this unanimously?
Yes.
Thank you.
Judge, you indicated you talked with some other judges about transfers. Do you recall other judges other than Forest County who had things other than child support transfers?
Judge Moore, who is now the tribal judge for the Lakota Ray Band, basically informed the forum that he's aware of about a half a dozen cases that have transferred from Sawyer County to the Lakota Ray. I can't tell you the composition of those cases. Judge Anderson from Bayfield County related to the forum that he was aware of two cases that had transferred from Bayfield to the Red Cliff Band. And no other forum members were aware of any use of the rule other than the one case that I just mentioned in Vilas County. So, again, you know, the numbers are pretty small. I mean, I'm aware of less than 10, in all honesty. So,
In the ordinance case that you transferred,
yes,
Is that case technically still in your court?
Well,
under the stay provision?
I guess maybe under the rule, under the confines of the rule, potentially. I mean, it's done. I don't know what to say there. You know, we have this continuing jurisdiction under the rule for some period of time, but it was transferred and resolved in the tribal court. I don't expect to ever see it again. Mm-hmm. It was a relatively, moderate type of case and one of particular interest to the Lac du Fombo, much more so than to me.
Judge, sometimes things as they unfold in the circuit court unfold because that's the way we do it in our daily routine. And then once it comes on appeal, the procedural issue is really important, And so I ask, as you were relating to me the story about the trespass, it sounded to me like this was brought, the issue of transfer was brought on your own motion.
That was my motion, yes.
And did you grant your motion?
I did.
Okay.
Usually things I do on my own motion, I grant.
Well, I have a
point. No. We don't.
That's right. And so I focus on whether it was a stipulation to jurisdiction or whether it was there was no objection raised.
There was no objection.
How would you slice that issue?
I would characterize it as no objection raised because it wasn't brought to me as a stipulation.
Okay.
I would also perhaps offer for the court's consideration the fact that in Vilas County, at least, I don't see many cases in which there's the opportunity for application of this rule. And I think one of the reasons for that, and some of the other tribal judges, may have the same sense, because there's no other circuit judges here today, is that the history that's now being developed by the tribal courts as they've exercised jurisdiction, particularly in family court matters over a significant period of time, leads litigants to choose that forum or to at least not object to that forum even when they're non-members. And we have a lot of situations in which a Lac du Fombo member may be married to another tribal member but not a Lac du Fombo or to a non-Indian. And many of these cases are being filed initially in tribal court or being heard and resolved in tribal court. And there are some advantages there to litigants. It's a forum in which lay advocates can be used rather than lawyers, in which guardian ad litem may be something other than attorneys, in which the costs are moderate, and in which hearings can be granted pretty expeditiously. So obviously people must have a general sense that the judgments they're receiving from the tribal courts are reasoned and fair, or we would be seeing more of these cases being filed either in my court or in both courts and leading to the Teague protocol type of issue, and we just don't see that happening.
One of the comments in your letter, and you also made today, was that when the petition was filed, you didn't anticipate, other than Brown County perhaps, a lot of usage. And so you say in your letter on file that indeed that expectation has been fulfilled. There has been some, but not a lot of usage. What was the impetus then, realizing that likely was not going to be a lot of usage from your perspective, what was the impetus for those on the state tribal justice forum to bring this petition before the court?
Well, it was to avoid precisely the Teague situation. Even the Teague protocols, which were adopted as a result of all that conflict and confusion that Teague engendered, are an unwieldy framework to allocate jurisdiction because they anticipate that you've got a case that's filed in both of the courts, that there is an antagonism between the courts, and that you have to go through this fairly complicated process to try to resolve. And what the forum was looking at, actually, we looked at a statute from the state of Washington that is one paragraph long that seemed to accomplish what it took us many more to ultimately accomplish by rule. But it was the concept that that there could be a discretionary transfer of cases, civil cases, to from state court to tribal court. And we thought this would be a good rule. It would provide a mechanism that wouldn't need to create conflict when there was none, that in cases in which there was concurrent civil jurisdiction and all indicators favored a transfer to tribal court, that it could be accomplished. And there was no other mechanism to do that other than for someone who wanted it in tribal court to go file in tribal court and then have this process under Teague. So that was the impetus.
Are there any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge Nielsen. You. James Botsford, Wisconsin Judicare.
I'd like to say good morning to all the members of this honorable court. I'm hoping to testify just on one little piece of this, and that is the relatively advanced stage of state and tribal judicial relations here in Wisconsin. My name is James Botsford. I'm the director of the Indian Law Office at Wisconsin Judicare. I'm also on the board of the Indian Law section of the state bar. It's with that hat that puts me on this state tribal justice forum, as Judge Nielsen indicated. I'm a member. My office has assisted the Wisconsin Tribal Judges Association with their initial creation, incorporation, bylaws, and whatnot in 1991 and right up to the present. So we have a lot of familiarity. And because I wear one or more of those hats, I'm not sure which, I was invited to attend a symposium last week sponsored by the National Judicial College. And it was a regional walking on common ground conference, which this court has been involved in earlier years. And it was for the state and tribal and federal judges of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. The Wisconsin court system sent some state court judges to that conference. And I was asked to speak there with Judge Dave Rash from the Mohican Nation, a judge in the Stockbridge-Munsee Tribal Court, and the former president of the Wisconsin Tribal Judges Association. He often teaches at the National Judicial College, and so he and I got asked to talk about what's going on in Wisconsin in state tribal judicial relations. And I am pleased to report to you that this was just last week, that what we talked about was one of the highlights of this two-day symposium. We were held over time. We were cornered afterwards and asked for our cards. We were told by state court judges, primarily from Michigan, "We will be calling you. Will you come back over? How much notice do you need to come and meet with us?" They were so impressed about the creation of the State Tribal Justice Forum here in Wisconsin. They have no such thing. They said, "That's what we need to move these issues along." The same was true of the Wisconsin Tribal Judges Association. The tribal judges there said, "That's what we need. Then there's a way for us all to be unified and represent our interests together in advancing issues with the state court system." Then there was the Teague protocols. These guys over there couldn't believe it, that we've got these Teague protocols. And so we backed up and said how they came out of the Teague case and this principle of comity that has evolved here in Wisconsin led to those Teague protocols. And then beyond that, as Judge Nielsen just testified, to get to this discretionary transfer rule, to find an even more convenient expression of comity without forcing a crisis of competing jurisdictions, a case filed in both courts. It was remarkable how well we were received, and we go over there and we, you know, come out of the trenches here and go over there, and we think us, we're just struggling along here trying to put things together and make things work. And we got over there and discovered that relative to others, we have done quite remarkably well, apparently. So I wanted to report to you that we are considered a model. And they want copies of how the forum was created here, how the Tribal Judges Association was created here, what's in those Teague protocols, and the discretionary transfer rule. All of that they asked us for and asked if we would come help them with individually. So I think that the level of cooperation, the level of the expression of comity between the jurisdictions and the respect that's inherent in that is commendable, and I thank all of you for creating that circumstance.
Mr. Botsford, I've got a question, because you said that there were people there from Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin. I had the chance at the request of the Chief Justice to speak to the National Conference of Tribal Court Judges about 801-54, and the reaction was very much the same. They were very, very interested in what we had done in Wisconsin, but especially people from the state of Minnesota were, because they said they were going through a process of attempting to develop something similar to 801-54. Did you get any information as to whether that's ever happened in Minnesota?
Regrettably, it didn't look like that is moving. There is, however, one really good story out of Minnesota. It's from up in the Leech Lake area, Walker, Bemidji region. There is a state court judge and a tribal court judge up there who just got fed up with the difficulties of trying to get things done in a larger basis, and they just entered into a really an oral agreement to share the bench together on drug court kinds of cases. And they just do that, and then it started working, and they got asked, can we see the model that you built? And it turned out it was a handshake. And so they then committed it to writing, and it is their agreement to do this is 52 words long. So and they're talking all over the country about the collaboration that they have there, and the success rate at something like 90% or something on these drug court cases. They were talking 10,000 something consecutive days of success for the people that they have helped, that many collective days of sobriety of folks that had been through that system. And so that, by the way, they called here. They called the tribal judges here and the state judges here because they had heard about us when they were initially kicking this off. And but they deserve the credit for the very innovative thing they have done there. But the downside, not of that program, but in Minnesota, is that they have not, as a state, been able to do anything else. And they too were looking to what we have done here.
Mr. Botsford, do you have any firsthand knowledge of any of the transfer cases that Judge Nielsen referred to?
I don't. I have not been involved in a single case.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Counsel. Judge Eugene Whitefish, 1st County, Pottawatomie, National American Indian Court Judges Association, Judge Whitefish.
Good morning, Justices, to each and every one of you. Well, my name is Eugene Whitefish. I'm the Chief Judge for the Forest County Pottawatomie Tribal Court. I've been elected to that position since 1994, as well as I used to be the president of the National American Indian Court Judges Association. And Justice Crooks, just to take off from your comment, the National American Indian Court Judges Association had a lot of questions for me as when I served as president. Because in my region, which is region number 10, which represents Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Minnesota, they look to our area, region 10, as one of the leaders in that tribal state consortium and how we work together. Where I always look to, they always ask me, how do the tribal court judges and the state court judges and the federal court judges work together? How are you able to do this? So that was a question that's brought before me. And I informed them of the various groups that we have in Wisconsin. And now you've just heard from Mr. Botsford that even Michigan and Minnesota look to Wisconsin because of the efforts that each and every one of us, not only you justices, but the tribal court judges and as well as the state court judges, have come together from what we had first started, what we call walking on common ground. The common ground being the justice for all, as it says in the Pledge of Allegiance. And that's exactly what it is, along with the rights of all the individuals, because the natives are citizens of the United States as well, and their rights are protected as well in our tribal courts. They have the right for their attorney to represent them. And now there's a new passage that the president recently signed that the National American Indian Court judges are going to be exactly addressing, I believe, in 2 weeks over in Oneida. Now, this is the National Association. On a local level, see, I'm the chief judge of Forest County, Pottawatomie. Inside of our community in Forest County alone, there are two Native American communities. In other words, two sovereign nations within Forest County. There's the Sagagan Shippa and the Forest County Pottawatomie. Both of them are small communities, but at the same time, both courts, the state court, circuit court, and the tribal court, both of us have the discretionary rule to transfer. Both of them have the forms. And a lot of the times when there's something heard in the state court, such as a divorce, and the tribal court holds the child support in that matter, when they want a modification, our tribal court clerks will hand them and say, I'm sorry, this is not the court of originality. It has to go back to state court for that modification. However, if the state court does wish to modify, and when we have that law, then you can turn around and ask for a transfer. So they're given a copy of that. And they can take that to state court. One good example is there was a case that came before tribal court where there was a guardianship. Judge Stenz and I, both of us had jurisdiction, as was addressed by Justice Rogensack. There was concurrent jurisdiction. But where is it likely to be held? We said, where's the services, most of the services going to be performed? Most of it was going to be performed in tribal level. Both the guardian, the board, she was also a member of our tribe, as well as her family. So therefore, when Judge Stenz and I got together, he says, all the services that are being performed on a tribal level. We both have concurrent jurisdiction, but it would seem more fit for this family, for it to be heard in the tribal level. And at that time, Judge Stenz agreed that the best forum for it was in the tribal court. And it still is there, and the family is happy. I mean, this is what we talked about when we first started talking about walking on common ground. What is the justice? What is the best forum? And their rights are protected, each and every one of them. And as looking then from the national level, we are the leaders. Wisconsin is the leaders when it comes to on a national level, when they look to us what we do. Because they don't have exactly this in theirs. They could have it. I wish every state could have it. Where justice such as you are open-minded and willing to listen. What is the best? To walk everyone walking on common ground for the justice of all.
You know, Judge Whitefish, you know, what you say
certainly resonates with me. And as you know, because you and I are acquainted from way back, I was the co-chair of the first state court, tribal court planning committee when we got this started. I have a great deal of respect for the Indian tribes, what they do, for their judges, for their court systems. And I don't want you to interpret any question I have that I'm against the tribes. I am absolutely in favor of everything you do. My concern is very foundational. You know, you are sovereign, a sovereign nation, the Potawatomi tribe is, and I respect that sovereignty. But you are not bound by the Wisconsin Constitution in your courts, correct?
No.
You are not bound by the United States Constitution in your courts. And see, part of that is your strength as a sovereign, but part of it is what troubles me, because everyone, in my view, has a right to be protected under the Wisconsin Constitution if they're litigating within the four corners of our state, and always under the Constitution of the United States. And that's what's troubling me. If people consent to go, I think that's, I would have no trouble with that. I don't have any trouble with it. I think, as you say, it's a better court. It's a better forum. It's more in tune with the needs of the people that are before the court. That's fine. My problem is, and that I'm having trouble reconciling, is not that the tribal courts aren't doing a great job. I think they do. My problem are with these other guarantees. And if someone doesn't want to go, I don't know how to preserve those guarantees for them. And that's really what's bothering me about this. So I don't know if there's any way that we can work through this except by consent. By consent, I have no problems. My problem with the statute is that it's non-consensual for folks who are not tribal members. And, you know, when this first went through, we got a couple of letters from some tribal members, not from the Forest County Potawatomi, but from other tribal members who said, I'm on the outs with the leadership in my tribe. I don't want to have to litigate in my tribal court. I want my rights to be heard in circuit court. Well, you know, the tribal members have every bit as right as anyone else, certainly, to use the circuit courts of the state of Wisconsin or any court in Wisconsin. And I wish you could kind of lead me to something that would give me some comfort here, because I'm still having a heck of a hard time with it.
If we look to it, there's some ground rules that if they are within the jurisdiction of the sovereign nation, which sovereign nation are they within the jurisdiction? If they live within our community, we look at not only if they're tribal members, but if they're living within the boundaries of our community also sometimes determines that jurisdiction as well.
Well, you know, there's some federal jurisdiction, you know, like ICWA and a few others, mm-hmm. but Wisconsin is a public law 280 state. So we do start right off having jurisdiction on matters that otherwise would be really federal jurisdiction in many states that aren't public law 280 states.
When the public law 280 came out, mm-hmm. they tried to switch that, give the state the authority. The federal didn't want their authority where the public law 280 originally came. So we are blessed with this because of the federal law.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a burden and a blessing kind of all at the same time.
But I think all of us are working together in order to overcome those, even the questions about it.
Judge, when we heard this in 2009, the primary concern then was the child support situation with the Oneida tribe. And the order that was issued said in part, in Wisconsin, the Oneida Nation has received funding to establish such a program that is dealing with child support and custody, and assume the management of certain post-judgment child support cases from state circuit courts. And then the footnote says, the Forest County Potawatomi community, the Lac du Flambeau Band of the Lake Superior Chippewa Indians, and the Menominee Tribe of Wisconsin have already established such programs with the assistance of the Department of Children and Families. Now, my question is this. Is the Forest County Potawatomi community a par with the Oneidas in terms of child support programs and the other two tribes as well?
What the child support does in Forest County is they're looking at the 4D program and have an agreement with the state that all child support is heard by the Forest County Potawatomi Tribal Court and transferred that over. And humorously, and I say this humorously, sometimes we get too serious, humorously I say all the courts north of 29, we can meet together and we can have a handshake and agreement. All the courts north south of 29 have to have a law and all the written paper, all right?
Pardon. Oh, that tells
no
us something.
No offense to anyone, all right? I've said that openly. It's not offense to any of us justices, or you justices. It was just a humorous joke. But we find a way to make it work. There, and I'm going to quote a judge that once sent the circuit court judge, if the tribal court wants to hear child support cases and my docket is so full, why won't I let the tribal court share in my docket and let them hear? It's their people. It's they're the ones that have exactly the jurisdiction on child support. And I'm going to take this a bit further. The reason that in our law, in the Forest County Potawatomi Tribal Court law, it says that our tribe adopted, it says because of our tribal income that there's only two reasons that someone can go after their tribal income. One is for child support, and the other is debts that's owed to the tribe. Only two things that can go after their tribal income. Now, for child support, it makes it a lot easier if our tribe hears their child support, because out of their tribal income, they never see that. They never see if the party has two children and it heard before my court. They never see that money because I order our accounting to take it right off of their tribal income even before they see the money. So in Forest County Potawatomi Tribal Court, there is never any arrearages, never. And the state of Wisconsin beat that. That's very positive. Yes, I have some parties that do not like it that our court does that, but we take it right off the top. They have a tribal income wherever they live. If they live down here in Madison and that tribal member has some children here in Madison, that is heard back in our court. We take their tribal income and whatever money's left over, then they get the rest. But so that's one of the benefits of it. But that's only Forest County Potawatomi. Each one of their sovereign nations, Oneida, Lac du Flambeau, they each operate theirs a little bit differently, but still they still do take their child support.
Well, I certainly applaud the good cooperation north of 29. What I'm trying to get at is there are 11 tribes and bands in Wisconsin, as I understand it. This order from 2009 talks about four of them. And we have a letter from the Oneida tribe talking about the transfer of, I think it's somewhere well over 500 cases on child support. You have not provided any statistics, I don't believe, about the transfer of child support cases to the Potawatomi Community Tribal Court. And we don't have that in any other tribes as well. Is the provision that was passed last year something that governs your tribe or doesn't it?
Justice, when we passed this in 2008, Forest County Potawatomi was already handling child support cases.
It was already handled.
And the Forest County Potawatomi was already handling the cases in 2008 when this rule was passed. They were already being transferred. Because under 4D, we had made an agreement with the state that the child at Forest County Potawatomi Tribal Court would be handling the child support cases. So a lot of them, an agreement was just handed over from the various counties to through the 4D, the federal program, so our court could handle it.
So those 4D agreements supersede this rule, is that correct?
Some of them do, yes. But that program is still coming about. That's so, that program, different tribes, I don't know how many tribes have got onto that 4D program this year, but each year that continues to grow.
That's a federal program.
Yes, it is.
Through the state. Mm-hmm. State, federal. That's what you refer to as 4D.
Yes.
And according to the footnote to the order on 0711A filed July 1, it says, the Forest County Potawatomi community, the Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians, and the Menominee Tribe of Wisconsin have already established such programs with the assistance of the Department of Children and Families, or the transfer of cases in these matters occurred prior to the effective date of what we did. So that was a federal program with the state that you've been following. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's what I understood.
Well, let's just say hypothetically, we were talking about a child support case where the children were not living on tribal land, and it involved the Lakota Ray or Red Cliff. Are they governed by the rule?
If they were from LCO or any other tribe, my court wouldn't hear it.
Yeah, no, but I mean, they have tribal courts, I assume.
Okay, let's put this specifically at Potawatomi. That way I can answer that, because I can't answer for another sovereign nation. Would you repeat the question, please?
Well, the way I understand what the chief asked and what I'm trying to ask is that the Forest County Potawatomi community is really not bound by the rules that were passed last year because they have a 4D agreement that supersedes that rule. Am I getting it wrong?
We are bound by that rule because if you look at the rule, and that makes so both of them, both the circuit court and the tribal court can work together, where before a lot of them were just transferred. This makes it, this goes back to the joke that I basically made, that we had a handshake. But this gives it the concrete, the rule gives it the concrete, the discretionary rule gives it the concrete form in order to do it on a local level, between the circuit court judges and the tribal court judges.
Okay. Well, Judge Nielsen testified, and he may be called upon to testify again. But I gather there are no child support cases in Vilas County that are being transferred to
Judge Nielsen, you have to take the mic so we can record you, please.
Would you like to address?
Yeah. Do you mind, Judge?
Oh.
This is the cooperative system.
Sure.
You can both sit, stand at the microphone.
Show our cooperation.
The
statute of limitations has probably run, so I can tell you that my predecessor and good friend, Judge Moore, who was the Vilas County Circuit Judge, did exactly what Judge Whitefish is talking about. This was just an agreement that was made with the tribal counterparts. The 4D people were involved. The child support cases from Vilas County got transferred to the Lac du Flambeau Band, and that's where they've been for many years, at least 15 years, I think. So this was done some time ago. It was done before this rule, and the rule actually, in one sense, gave us the formal authority to transfer a case from circuit court to tribal court, which Judge Moore lacked, which the parties lacked at the time that Forest County Potawatomi did the same thing. It just got done. We live in maybe a little different time, and so we wanted this rule. Once 801-54 became adopted, now we created an impediment to what had been done cooperatively in the North, because 801-54 says you're going to hold a hearing on each case. And that got pretty
burdensome with respect to this concept of a bulk transfer, if you will, of child support cases. So these courts that you refer to already had made the transfers. They were done without benefit of this rule. They were just done. And so we don't have pending child support cases in Vilas County. They're in the Lac du Flambeau band, and the same is true for the...
I really am not getting this. Let us say, let's say on September 1st of this year, a child is born in Eagle River, where there is a Lac du Flambeau mother and a father who is not an Indian, non-Indian. And there's a child support question that comes up. First, we have to establish paternity. But where is that established?
Well, it depends on which court is asked to do it. But if it's Vilas County, presumably Vilas County. Now,
okay, so
I'm trying to anticipate your question. You asked about what would happen in one of these other courts where, and the same is true, I think, in Vilas County. Under 801.54, any one of these cases individually, as they came up, could be transferred without a lot of, a great deal of difficulty. It's the difficulty of transferring 500 cases or 1,000 cases from Brown County to the Oneida Nation that really required the adjustment in the rule. In Judge Whitefish's court, in the Lac du Flambeau court, our respective counties have already transferred those that happened without the imprimatur of the Supreme Court. It just happened.
Now, what happens now? So what happens today?
Well, what happens today is that in the vast majority of cases in which we're dealing with tribal members, the support is established in the tribal courts, and we don't even know that those cases exist. In a case in which paternity would be established in my court, technically, I guess it would stay in my court unless there was a discretionary transfer.
Okay, but on the circuit court may, on its own motion,
yes,
or on motion of any party, after notice to the parties of their right to object, transfer a post-judgment child support, custody, or placement provision of an action in which the state is a real party in interest, pursuant to 767-02-2052, to a tribal court located in Wisconsin that is receiving funding from the federal court to operate a child support program. So we're really, this is a federal issue here. The circuit court must first make a threshold determination that concurrent jurisdiction exists. I assume it does because that's what the feds say. Is that right?
Yes, sure. A tribal court has civil jurisdiction to establish child support. So that's concurrent jurisdiction.
Okay, if it's found to exist, the transfer will occur unless a party objects in a timely manner. Upon the filing of a timely objection, the circuit court should conduct a hearing in the record considering all the factors that are set forth earlier. And that statute says that you can appeal to the, if you don't want to be transferred, you can appeal to the Court of Appeals, and they must hear that case. It's the only time I can think of that this court has said, Court of Appeals, you must take the appeal. And there are forms here. So I think that's the way it works, as best I understand. So it would be a post-judgment child support custody or placement provision.
Yes. Thank you.
Just if you would just stay. Justice Prosser, do you have anything else you want to say?
I'm not quite clear why Lac du Flambeau and Forest County Potawatomi community and the Menominees are different from the Oneidas.
Justice Prosser, they're not in any respect, except that the great majority of their child support cases were already transferred to the tribal courts prior to this rule. Now that we created 801.54, to have an individual hearing on each particular case would be a burden to a county that was trying to make a bulk transfer of these cases to its corresponding tribal court. And that's where 2M allows it to be done with essentially a negative notice, if you will. You know, and that was the purpose of 2M. So we're not any different, and we wouldn't be any different for new cases coming into the system. If they were to come in and there's a tribal interest, there would need to be the exercise of discretionary transfer to send them back. But most of them are there already, and the new ones are mostly, for the most part, being created there.
That's... Apparently, Brown County came in after these other tribes came in into this 4D program.
Well after, yes.
Well after. So you had a system that the state and feds had worked out on child support with the tribes. Now we came in with our rule on hearings, and Brown County was in the midst of joining 4D, as I understand it, and so it got caught up in the new rule of hearings as it was trying to transfer our load of cases, and that's why we had 2M and the Department of Children and Families said, whoa, we got a problem here, which the Forest County didn't have because they had already been doing it, so they didn't have this massive, what I would call, backlog.
Yes, and in the interest of Judge Whitefish and myself, I can tell you that you've got a couple of very qualified speakers on your list who will address the Brown County situation.
Yes, I gather that. Yes. Okay, good. Thank you, Judge Nielsen.
Thank you. Judge Thomas will be speaking on behalf of Oneida.
Okay.
And in parting, if there's no other questions, and the reason that that become a problem, Oneida's right on the line of north of 29 and south of 29. All right? No disrespect for the Oneida people.
Thank you, Chief Judge.
Is there any further questions?
Thank you, Chief Judge Whitefish. Oh, I'm sorry, Justice Prosser.
There is Ho-Chunk. Ho-Chunk is south of 29.
I don't like to speak for the other tribes because their representative is here.
Okay.
Stockbridge Muncie's north of 29.
That's right.
Oh yeah. I really am. This is just not clear to me. It would seem to me that after the rule was adopted, that all tribes in the state would be bound by the rule, whether the rule makes any sense or not. What I'm hearing from you is that the state tribal forum, in asking for the basic rule, created the problem of not carving out an exception right at the beginning for child support cases. Because it slapped on the transfers in child support cases all kinds of procedures that didn't exist before. Am I wrong?
Again, because of the rule, how the rule is stated, the transfer, and I think Oneida probably can answer that question a lot better.
I would suggest that the rule is probably initially brought by the State Tribal Forum did not create this problem, that this problem was probably created by the court in repeatedly adding criteria and procedures into the rule. This rule had a history, and we did a lot of amending and adding and maybe even subtracting, but probably added more than we subtracted. And the result then was a rule that probably would work okay in the counties that already were 4Ds because they could deal with the hearing one at a time as these cases came up. I mean, I'm making all this up, but that's what I understand. But the proverbial fan and its matters came up in Oneida County because that had not already processed the 4D cases. Oneida County. I'm sorry, Oneida Nation, Brown County. Thank you. It's a good thing we have a judge from Brown County. So we'll hear from that in Oneida. And that's my supposition of why this proceeded in the way it did. How's that for an answer, Judge?
Thank you.
You'll take it, right? Okay. All right. Anything else? Thank you very much, Judge Whitefish. Winifred Thomas, Chief Judicial Officer, Oneida Nation. Good seeing you again, Judge.
Wastatius Lee, I greet you this morning with good morning. And I could also greet you with Skanagoga. How goes it?
Hope well.
I say it goes well as well. I first would like to thank each and every one of you this morning for allowing the passage of the 80154, even if it was just in a preliminary state at that point in time. What I also would like to give thanks this morning to Brown County, and I did meet with the judges. Actually, our court met with the judges last month, and I did say I would put a plug in for them. Judge Don Zeidmulder, who has been very, very helpful in helping the transition of cases to Oneida. And I'd like to let all of you know that he has done a very good job. All the cases are coming in from Green Bay, from Brown County. And in a very good way. And I thank you for allowing Brown County to do that for us. When you're talking right now, you're asking questions of the state forum. I was not there at its inception, so I can't speak to a lot of the questions that you're asking. I can, however, speak to 80154 as it has affected Oneida. On behalf of Oneida, I thank you as well, the state forum that has brought this to be. I can't forget. I wanted to publicly thank the individuals that have made this possible for our Oneida children and our Oneida families, and that's Lisa Schwartz, Attorney Carol Long, Connie Chesnick, and I thank you. I publicly thank you for that. Now, to begin with, 2 years ago when we were here and we all gave testimony as to why and we thought this should go forward. I didn't make testimony that day because I really had to give some thought. And to watch this process, because number one, Oneida is very slow with our legislators, so our laws weren't in place. They were on the drafting board. They've been on the drafting board for years, but this just kind of kicked them in the end to get it going and get it done. And I thank, again, I thank the state forum for doing that as well. But over the last 2 years, what I have seen, and I have been with the Oneida Tribal Judicial System since 1995, I have seen the transfer of cases coming from Green Bay, which I understand is about 4,000. I know that's hard for everyone to realize that there are that many cases out there. We in Oneida realize it very well. We know the families. As you know, Indian country is all extended families. Who better to take care of your own than your own? So to watch the cases that have started coming through, and we scrambled. The law was made. It took us a while. And when the cases started coming, and I know the judges from Green Bay were reluctant because they, too, were asking the same questions on Justice Prosser that you are right now. You know, what about our how come, our why not? And so what we've had to do is we've tried to bridge that gap, the communication gap as to what we are about and what we have to offer. And so far, we have tried to bridge that very respectfully, and hopefully that we have done a very good job. You see the amount of cases so far that have been transferred. There is a difference in child support numbers as ours, because there's always going to be a slight difference because they're in the process of processing them, and we've already had them. But I want to tell you the success stories. Justice Rogensack, you refer always to the case that had come to you from the party of which we both know. We know that cases in every court, individuals that appear, and you're right, there's winners and there's losers. What Oneida tries very hard to do is to make all of us a win-win situation by allowing those families to come into the Oneida Court. We have our own people as the judges. When we have individuals that come in and don't speak to one another, we have judges that can say, the two of you are going to speak today, whether you like it or not, because we're not going to rule on this until you do. We have the luxury of doing that, because it's like a parent. We can sit here and say those things. And guess what? It works. I'm here to tell you it works. Call it whatever you want to call it. We like to call it peacemaking. Bring those children in and bring those parents in, and we try very, very hard to make it a win-win situation, even though the parents have agreed to disagree.
Given the processes that you apply and the numbers you speak of, is it necessary to have a transfer of jurisdiction that's non-consensual? Isn't just consensual transfers of jurisdiction to tribal court sufficient to carry on the processes that you're speaking of?
Sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. If they're non-consensual, there has to been a reason why. And we don't know that reason why until they have come into the court to find out why they hadn't been. So-and-so's family hadn't done, whatever hadn't done. I work here, and I know you're going to take whatever. So all those questions can be answered through Oneida.
But isn't it enough just to have someone say, no, I don't want to have my case transferred? I mean, it seems to me like, from the testimony I'm hearing, that most people consent to the transfer, whether they're tribal members or non-tribal members. And I guess what I'm trying to understand is whether there really is a need for non-consensual transfers. Pretty much everybody has said they're very few and far between. So if they're very few and far between, then maybe I can get comfortable with the law if it is a consensual transfer. And I guess that's what my question goes to.
And I can understand that. Do I feel that it needs to be
non-consensual?
Non-consensual?
Right, right.
I say whatever I guess would make you feel comfortable. I do know what happens when it is consensual.
Sure.
And I've seen the success stories that has already happened.
And I agree with those. I mean, I've read a lot of reports about the wonderful work that you are doing, and that's what we want, is for everyone to be in a situation where justice can be provided to everyone. I congratulate you on your efforts.
Thank you.
Judge, the letter that you sent to us indicates of the 644 cases in which a motion to transfer was made, there were 21 cases in which an objection was made to that transfer. And then out of that 20, those 21 objections, apparently the circuit court judge determined that 5 should not be transferred, and the remaining 16, even though there were objections, should be transferred. Are you able to tell us anything about those 16 cases that survived that process of objection, but nevertheless were transferred over objection?
Yes, I can. We met with Judge Greca about 2 months, 3 months ago, and it's called communication. And when he found out, he met with Honorable Mary Adams and myself, and when he found out what Oneida is all about, why we're doing this, why we're excited, and he had questions to ask as far as ethnics, as far as peacemaking. I mean, he had a whole litany of questions to ask. We answered, and he said, well, now that explains why this one case and that one case. And he said, okay, that, you know, I can understand now. So that's the only answer I can give you, is that it's communication. And that's basically what we're here today, to let you know what we're about. And once that happened, I don't know that he's had any more questions. However, he hasn't asked, so.
Of those 21 where there was an objection and 5 weren't transferred, that left 16. Were there any appeals in those cases to the Court of Appeals?
No, we've had none.
But they were advised they could appeal.
Yes, yes. That's Judge Greca. Judge Greca is the one. Yes, he had advised them.
And they were then completed, I assume, the 16 cases?
I'm assuming, yes.
Yes, okay.
Did any of those 16 cases that were transferred over objection involve a non-Indian?
I don't know. I mean, they would not have been identified to us. I don't know if they would have been identified to...
Well, maybe we can have...
I mean, I wouldn't have been.
Okay, maybe we can have...
Right. Someone else would be able to answer that question.
Good. Thank you. You think... Go ahead.
Well, I'd like to follow up on some of the statistics in your letter as well. 644 cases in which a motion to transfer was made. I don't quite understand who makes the motion.
That's where I will yield to. Lisa? I would yield that question to Lisa.
Okay.
I serve on the Oneida Tribal Judicial System as an appellate clerk. Honorable Mary Adams serves as a trial.
Okay, and who's going?
Judge.
And Lisa is going to talk to us. Okay, fine.
The
rule says it could be done on the court's motion.
Yes.
Go ahead. All right. Do you have any other questions?
I would like to get a comment from someone about the 81 cases in which the motion was withdrawn by the United Nations. I mean, that's kind of interesting. Somebody would like to flesh it out.
Okay, we'll ask Lisa to do that, too. Who's going to answer
that? Because of the ordinance.
Okay. We'll get some explanation of that,
yes,
too. Thank you. Judge, I'm going to ask what some might consider a troublesome question. Do you think a non-Indian can get a fair hearing and a fair decision in an Indian court? And then I'm going to ask you, do you think an Indian can get a fair and good decision in the circuit court, white man's court?
I'm not under oath, am I? I and I say that sincerely. I am half Oneida. My father, my grandfather was as white as a snowflake, God bless him. And do I feel anyone entering into our court system would have a fair and just hearing? Yes, they would.
And do the best you can.
Well, you have to stop and remember, you have five that, or what is it, 2, 4, 6, 7 that make the decision. On every case that come before us, there's 3 that make that decision. Mm-hmm. So you have to have 3 in agreement, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Will I get the same treatment in the non-Indian court? I don't know.
We hope so.
I've never been there. But I do know a lot of my people that have been. And have they had what I would have given them in my court? No, they did not. That's why I am as passionate about the tribal court as I am.
Thank you, Judge. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Mary Adams, you're an Oneida tribe trial judge.
Yes, the goalie
today.
Hello, I am Mary Adams, judge for the trial court at the Oneida Tribe. I've been there since I believe I was elected in 1999. I'll be serving out my 12 years this coming July. I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from Cal State San Bernardino, and a master's degree in organizational leadership from Marion College. I also serve as an alternate on the State and Tribal Justice Forum, although their times of meeting hasn't been so well with my availability, especially since I'm one of the major judges on the trial court that does the child support and the divorces. And I'd like to read you something that when the when the parents come in for child support, I read this to them. And it says, this hearing is about the best interest of your child or children. You as a parent are role models for your children. You need to teach them how to be respectful by being respectful to each other, by listening to one another. And that's what we try to read to them when they come in, especially if they're a little contentious in there. We hand them out child support, frequently asked questions so that they understand terms, the legal wording and terms, because many times they do come in there pro se. However, some are represented by attorneys, and then we have child support who doesn't represent either one of them but come in on the financial part of child support. And as far Oneida Tribal Services, we mentioned that if you're having a trouble raising your children not understanding you as a father, your responsibilities, we offer classes for that. We offer young mothers parenting classes, and we tell them in court because it is your responsibility to make sure that that child is raised in a healthy environment. And regardless if you are Oneida or not, we offer these classes for you to raise these children free at no cost. And when parents come in there, Oneida people look like anybody else. You don't know whether they're Indian or whether they're not. Of course, the sheet does tell you that they are a tribal member or not. But as far as I am concerned with, I'm concerned that they're raising these kids in a safe and healthy environment, and that's what I tell them. And the GALs that we offer are covered by the tribe and can get some funding through, I think, TANF. And I think that the parties do have 2 chances to object to a transfer. They have the first one in Brown County. The second one comes to us. And, yes, there has been some that came in there for an objection, and they clearly get their chance to answer their objection. What grounds do you object? And I said, you're here today for an objection. Is that correct? They said, no. We got the summons in the mail, and we're here. I have never had a person, and I think that we get a stack of them, probably about between 20 and 40 cases that come in front of us. And if one or two of the people show up, one or two of the parties show up, they thought they got a summons, and they need to be there.
And do you understand that what you're here for is because you're objecting to the transfer? I said, oh, we just want to know where child support is, and we want to know how we can, you know, we don't want to get any arrears, you know, all kinds of other reasons. But not once has anyone asked not to be transferred to the Oneida tribe. And then when the hearing starts going on and the parties are negotiating placement and other terms, you know, and I explained to them that we're trying the best scenario, and our law supports that both have the equal rights to those kids. That's what we support. Father and mother have an equal time with those kids, unless you can show the court why not. Why is this not healthy? And so that's what I do. I do not put a face or non-Indian, whatever, but that's the movement that our law supports is equal, maximizing placement. So if there's any questions, we're ready for questions.
You have an appellate system, too, obviously.
Yes.
And Judge Thomas spoke about that. How many times are your child support appealed?
Not once.
Do you use there are guidelines in the state system about child support, you know, how much the family makes, one or two kids, four kids, et cetera.
Yes, we use the state system.
Do you use the state's guideline system?
Yes, we do. The other cases that we get is the modifications. The modifications for some circumstances that'll bring it in there, but other than that, we haven't had an appeal.
And you may not be the right person to ask, so you may not be able to answer this. How many Brown County cases still have to be transferred? I thought there was something about that in our material, but I have forgotten.
Yeah,
there's 644 transfers, and I think there were several thousand when we started, so it's still a backlog in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming in the interim, Brown County is working on this. Yo, the children get child support.
Yes.
Are there any questions, Justice Prosser?
Your Honor, I am not understanding this system, and I really need some help. Let's say this is your tribal court. This is the Brown County Circuit Court. It seems to me if we have two members of the Oneida Nation with a child and somehow there's a question of paternity or there's a question of child support and they come immediately to the Oneida Tribal Court, I don't see that our rule applies to that. That is not transfer. That's starting right in your court.
Yes.
Okay. It seems to me the rule that we passed applies in situations where the case starts in Brown County Circuit Court or in some other circuit court. And when that happens, it seems to me there has to be some kind of a judgment here because the rule, at least with respect to child support, is a post-judgment rule.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
I believe that they could come into Brown County as a stipulation if I'm not, you know, now that I'm not 100%, but I kind of think they could come in as a stipulation and go straight to the child support in Brown County. And once they're stipulated there, they would still be coming over as a transfer. So I'm not sure if it would warrant a court judgment on that when it's already they've been stipulated. You know, the parents stipulated, the judge will sign it, and so I think that's what you're asking me. I'm not sure.
Let's put it this way. If there's a child support, was there a divorce? Right?
Yes.
That's a judgment.
Yes.
It was probably in Brown County.
Yes.
So the post-judgment is post-divorce judgment child support.
Okay.
Either initial child support or modification of a judgment on child support. Does that help you?
Yes. I'm looking at There's subsection 2 of the rule.
Which rule are you looking at? Are you looking at 09 or 08?
Well, 08 talks about discretionary transfers. When a civil action is brought in the circuit court of any county of this state, and when under the laws of the United States a tribal court has concurrent jurisdiction of the matter in controversy, the circuit court may, on its own motion or on the motion of any party, and after notice and hearing on the record on the issue of the transfer, cause such action to be transferred to the tribal court. That's the basic rule. Okay. Now we have the second rule, 2M. The circuit court may, on its own motion or the motion of any party, after notice to the parties of their right to object, transfer a post-judgment child support, custody, or placement provision of an action in which the state is a real party in interest. Blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
Okay. Who is under 2M, who makes the motion to transfer? Certainly the circuit court can do that.
Yes. Or the party.
If the circuit court doesn't do that, who makes the motion?
I believe the court. Can the court make that motion? The tribal court?
We'll ask someone to discuss that. You get it. It comes to your court, right?
It comes to our court, yes.
Someone has made a motion.
Yes.
Either the trial court or a party.
No, Chief, no, unless I'm misunderstanding, it does not come to the tribal court when it is started in the circuit court unless somebody makes a motion over here to transfer.
That's true.
Well, and the circuit court may on its own motion do that.
Well, the court may, sure. Yes. The court does that.
Okay.
How does the court know to do that?
Which court?
The circuit court.
Well, it makes the motion, so it knows.
To the child support office, I believe.
Because she's not in the circuit court.
Yeah, we'll get that.
But let me try this again. Okay. The rule does not apply to the tribal court.
No.
It doesn't apply.
It doesn't apply.
The rule applies to the circuit court.
Yes.
I'm interested in what happens in the circuit court. Mm-hmm. If everybody is in the tribal court and everybody's happy, there's nothing to argue about.
No.
The case is in the circuit court. Mm-hmm. Okay. Clearly, the judge can make a motion, as Judge Nielsen said. When I make a motion, I usually grant my motion. Okay. Everybody understands that. But this sort of assumes that the judge is fully apprised of what's going on and knows enough to make the motion. Okay. Is there an informal communication either from the tribe or from the Brown County Child Support Agency?
That's the one.
Or for one of the parties? Is there an informal communication to the judge so that the judge makes the own motion? Or is somebody making a formal motion when the judge doesn't make it himself or herself?
Well, see, the child support divisions, we have child support with Oneida and we have child support in the Brown County. And see, they're the ones that are working together to identify what children or what custodial, non-custodial parent is Oneida, is an Oneida member or other tribe. They are all working together there. So they are already prompt, so the judge knows that is a possible transfer. So they put it in for a transfer on the judge's motion, that is a Oneida member, so okay. He now knows, he identifies, and through our child support, who identifies through our enrollment office, that child or the custodial, non-custodial parents, one of them, are on our rolls to be identified as Oneida member.
So is it fair to say that the motion referred to in subsection 2M is really almost always a motion by the trial court itself.
In Brown County?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. In other words, I was a little confused about this. In the statistics provided by Judge Thomas, it talks about 644 cases in which a motion to transfer was made. Mm-hmm. 81 cases in which the motion was withdrawn by the Oneida Nation. How can the Oneida Nation withdraw a motion made by the circuit court?
I don't know what the circuit court, what factors, because that was Judge Greca's decisions. Those are the, all of that has to do with Judge Greca, not the Oneida tribe. I mean, as far as why there was a motion for those 81 those 81 cases to be taken out, not to be considered, it could be. I'm not sure what the factors are in that, because that those are Judge Greca's cases. I know that we met with them, and he had a number of the 16. He spoke on a number of those situations where some of the parents, other kids, are in Brown County, and they wanted, just because this happens to be an Oneida kid, they wanted all the kids to stay in the same county. So I believe that that was one of the reasons why, and it may have been for a few of those cases. But the other reason is, I mean, those are the ones that I can remember, because we did go to some training, and Judge Greca went over some of those cases at that training as to why, you know, why they would stay in Brown and Ottawa-Game County. And I thought it came down to like four or five. However, whenever those cases do arise in Brown County, it's my understanding that child support through the attorney's office will be at those hearings every time possible. So they would have a better idea as to why Judge Greca decided against the transfer on those cases. I you know, by the time they get to me, we then have a chance to, to discuss the motion or the objection when a parent comes in. We really don't see whether or not – we don't see the cases that Judge Greca upheld. We don't see them. They stay in Brown County. So we don't have a second opinion on anything as far as that goes. It would just be the child support. They would be at the hearing. Oneida child support.
May I ask one other question? Judge Thomas spoke, and I kind of like this, that the tribe can kind of talk to a couple in a way that perhaps a circuit court can't. Now, you said that you follow state guidelines on child support?
The fees, yeah, the monetary, the fees.
Okay. But I thought I read somewhere in here that there's the opportunity for in-kind contributions rather than cash.
Yes.
Can that be done in circuit court, too?
See, that I'm not sure, but our in-kind has a lot to do with when the father is not working or the non-custodial is not working, and they could do babysitting instead of putting the child in daycare. They could do snow blowing, lawn service, you know, and the reason why they do that in kind and why the tribe supports that is because it gives a chance sometimes for the father to be around those children and teach responsibilities. It enhances a relationship between the parents. And so that's where that is our efforts in that way. And another thing that when the cases come before us, I don't think we have more than six child support cases in a day. I have not seen more than six on our docket, and we have them on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and sometimes to accommodate the parents. If they're not available at that time, we got jobs, so we can accommodate them to Friday or Monday. And when they come in there, they have a lot of time. I mean, the motions, sometimes they go into an hour, and sometimes it's you guys better get this together. We're giving you a chance to design what you want here. If you can't do it, then we're going to do it for you. So we have a lot of time to spend with them, because the efforts, generally, when I see the transfers, I see where there's not a lot of shared placements. Our ordinance supports shared placement. That is equal time with the father as with the mother. And a lot of times, regardless of what situation, non-Oneida or Oneida, the mother does not want to let go. And it has to happen. It has to happen because that father's in here looking to see this child, and maybe we'll move it at small steps. But we are going to try to reach the area of maximization between both parents. That is what our ordinance supports. So that's why Judge Thomas said, we have a lot more time to spend with our cases, with our children, with our people, a lot more time. And when I say our people, I'm speaking of the parents regardless of who they are as the parents of that child, because sometimes the guidance may not be as strong as the court can make them. We have, I went to the family law conference with the state bar. There's a program on there for, I think it's called Wizard, that the parents, that we offered for the parents to use. Get on there and start doing your child placements on there, and, you know, get some kind of, they already like the computer. You know, they don't want to be calling. They want to type the text or the computer. Well, then get on there and design your own. Bring it to the court. Well, you know, as long as it's agreed upon where the child is going to be at a time, you know, we can go ahead and change that. And surely it is in the state, it's every 3 years for a modification. For our court, it's every 2 years. And then again, it's on circumstances. They can also come in as a modification, which they've been coming in as modifications on circumstances. And there is a vast amount of different circumstances that come in front of us. So we've seen a lot of modifications.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
That is my list, but I think that there are other people in the audience that can help out in some of these questions. So we hope that they'll all just stand and come to the podium and state your name and your affiliation.
My name is Lisa Schwartz, and I'm the Child Support Director for the Oneida Nation.
Okay, Ms. Schwartz. So how does it – who makes the motion?
The motion is done by the Brown County Circuit Court.
And how does that – how does the case come to the Brown County Circuit Court's
attention?
To back
up in history a little bit to explain this, we actually took our enrollment data and ran it through the State of Wisconsin Bureau of Child Support kids system.
Your enrollment data of the tribal members.
Yeah, of our tribal members. We ran a match through the kids system to identify potential cases where one party in a case would be an enrolled Oneida member. We've done that subsequently probably three times over the course of the past 3 years. We just finished one recently to catch cases in Brown County where, just as Justice Prosser has pointed out, there are cases sometimes where the parties may be Oneida and the Brown County Circuit Court judges weren't aware, and they've already gone through the order process there. So we foresee that we'll continue to do these matches to try to catch some of these cases. There's nothing at this point in anything for the circuit court to identify them as Oneida members, unless the judges were to ask.
Okay, so you've identified a divorced couple.
Correct.
With an Oneida child. Okay.
Correct.
So then what do you do?
Then our agency, the Child Support Agency, sends a preliminary notice. It's not mandated by the rule. It's just more consideration for the parties, and it just alerts them that they're going to get a formal notification from the county regarding the proposed transfer. And to watch for that notification, and if they would like to object, they have to follow that letter that they'll receive in the mail. 30 days later, after that notice is sent out, we send our list over to Brown County Child Support Agency, who then in turn does the paperwork on their side and sends out the negative notice.
Is it automatic, or do you look at each case and say this should be moved or this shouldn't be moved?
For the most part, it's automatic because one of those parties are Oneida. There are some, I will say, that we have had to look at a little more closely when it comes to depending if perhaps the guardian is the Oneida member, mm-hmm. something of that nature. Then once the negative notice goes out after that time frame is met, then if there were no objections heard, then the Brown County Child Support Agency staff prepare the notice to transfer on behalf of Judge Greca. And he signs off on those orders, and then the case is transferred over to us. And it happens faster in the child support world because it internally transfers in that database. We do use the KID system, the Bureau of Child Support KID system, for case processing. Mm-hmm. Once it comes to our agency, then one of my staff actually prepare the acceptance of jurisdiction that goes over to our tribal court.
Okay. And if the circuit court didn't identify this child as a Native American and didn't send out the proper notices to the tribe, what does that do to the judgment of the circuit court?
Nothing until we catch that case, frankly speaking, and that's why we've earmarked every year that we'll do a match through the KID system to try to catch those cases. We do communicate frequently with Brown County. I just had a request from one of the child support agency staff last week if I could verify enrollment or not of a case that came over to them. Mm-hmm. They are very proactive, and they do try to address that up front in the child support agency. If they can identify that either party is tribal, they would rather just internally refer that to us through the KID system before it ever sees any kind of judicial action in circuit court. Mm-hmm.
How's the Wisconsin Indian Child Welfare Act working?
That I really can't comment to. That's a little outside of my realm, mm-hmm. on ICWA. So.
I'm a little bit confused. The sure. Subsection 2M mm-hmm. about transfer does talk about post-judgment transfers. I thought I understood you to say that you try to facilitate transfers earlier than that. Maybe I don't want to put any words in your mouth.
No, you're correct, Justice Prosser. We do try to facilitate transfers before there's any judgment made, so we don't have to go through the entire negative notice process. It is quite cumbersome and lengthy. We do use the rule for all post-judgment transfers. That's the 664, I believe, that were, or 644, that had been noticed to that point. But pre-judgment transfers, we try to communicate between our staffs to facilitate that without having to actually wait until a judgment is made in the circuit court, then turn around and try to do that in a post-judgment manner.
What judgment are we talking about?
It could be any. It could be a new paternity action. It could be a divorce action.
Before the judgment is entered.
Correct.
And how is that accomplished? Somehow it's...
We have...
Has something been filed over here in the circuit court or not?
Not necessarily, no. In the public assistance realm, when someone applies for public assistance benefits, it's entered into a database system that interfaces with Wisconsin's Bureau of Child Support KIDS system. KIDS is the acronym for their database. That interface happens. We also use the KIDS system. So, and we also administer public assistance benefits. So if it comes out of our own tribal public assistance area economic support agency, those referrals automatically come to us through KIDS, and we receive those. There are some by chance that someone may apply for public assistance benefits in Brown County. Those would go over to the Brown County Child Support Agency. But what we've done is, one thing we've done to communicate well is we developed a list of most common Oneida names, the top list of 25 names, to, just to try to help the communication process with them to give them a heads up. Because unfortunately, with the kids' database, it identifies Native American as a race, but it doesn't differentiate tribes. So they're at a loss. It may come up to them that they're Native American, and that's their first step in, ooh, you know, we should probably look at this a little further, and perhaps it's an Oneida case that really should be over in their jurisdiction for them to establish a paternity or child support order.
Now, if it's sort of headed toward this court, mm-hmm. how do you redirect it to this court?
They will automatically, if it's pre-judgment, they will send that referral to us in the database. It comes in as a new initial referral to my intake worker, who then sets up the case, and it follows the same process almost that any other child support agency would have. We'll send out notice, you know, depending on what's needed for the case, whether it's paternity or a child support action on our end. Then we'll notice the parties that we received a referral, that they're receiving some type of public assistance benefits, and based on that, we're required by law to follow up and set a child support order or establish paternity.
Okay. Do I understand from what you're saying that nothing has ever been filed in this court?
In Brown County Circuit Court?
Yeah.
Yes, the cases that we've missed have been filed in the past year.
Okay.
Yes.
That's because kids is, because child support has become an administrative matter that may not necessarily be connected in the circuit court. Is that right?
Yes. There is that aspect as well, yes. It's very hard in the kids system to differentiate what tribal member or where they are from. All it's going to pull in is that they're Native American. So each child support agency has somewhat of a guess, or they have to do some further fact-finding with the participants.
Ms. Schwartz, do you have a similar program with Outagamie County as well?
We're hoping to. We were working with Brown County first because it was the case with the county with the largest number of cases that affected our membership. And Outagamie is in the works to start next.
How many cases do you estimate might be coming from Outagamie County?
Less than 500.
These are child support cases.
Correct.
When the cases are transferred post-judgment, does the child support agency then automatically have a in-court review of that judgment? Or do some of those cases post-judgment just get transferred for jurisdictional purposes, and really there's no need to go into tribal court in the near future on some of those?
It can be true both ways. Some will automatically just transfer for jurisdictional purposes, but as Judge Adams had previously stated, our review period is 24 months. So it is a shorter review period for modification than in state circuit court. And when that case comes over, the staff assigned to that will automatically look and see if that 24 period is up for us, then we will automatically send out the review notification at that point. So we are receiving, as Judge Adams had said, a lot of modification off of our review period being shorter than what the state statutes require. And Justice Prosser, if I may answer one other question that you had asked around in-kind. Only tribal regulations are allowed to honor in-kind under federal regulations at this point. So circuit court does not have that ability.
Maybe. How closely do you work with the federal government?
Very closely.
In what way?
I am privileged to be the president of the National Tribal Child Support Directors Association, which is a national association. I was elected a year ago, and I'm in my second year term. My term expires in August of 2011. I was privileged. We had our biannual meeting last week, and the commissioner from the Office of Child Support Enforcement, Vicki Turetsky, was in attendance.
Are there any other questions? Well, thank you very much, Ms. Schwartz. Is there anyone else who wishes or doesn't wish but will address us? Mr. Stenzel.
Good morning, Justices. My name's Paul Stenzel. Forgive me, my voice is a little hoarse. I was at the Packer game yesterday and yelling quite a bit, to no avail.
Right.
I'm an attorney based in Shorewood, Wisconsin, and I've worked with Indian tribes here in the state for about 15 years in a variety of capacities. Some of the tribes I work with their tribal courts in sort of a consultant advisor role. In other areas, I appear in tribal courts regularly. I wanted to just hit a few points to try and, I hope, assist the court here with some of the issues that I've heard raised as we've been discussing this morning. The first one is I think there's some curiosity about what type of objections there may have been in those cases in Brown County. And I don't think I'm speaking out of school because Judge Greca spoke to this at the family law section, Door County Family Law Workshop. I was on a panel with him, and this issue was discussed. And he discussed some of the objections. One of them was from an Oneida member, in fact, who said, well, Oneida doesn't really have a tribal court. And Judge Greca said, well, you know, I've been on the Internet, and I've talked to their judges, and I have here their rules of civil procedure, and I have their ordinances, and I have the materials establishing the court. They do have a court. And so he didn't allow that objection to stop the transfer. There was another person, I think it was also an Oneida member, who objected and said, well, you know, my sister-in-law works in the child support department. I don't want her to know my business about these cases. And Judge Greca said, well, you know, I'm sure that the child support agency would, you know, not assign someone who was closely related to you to work on your case. And then he also discussed, in case it was an issue of the Oneida judge having a conflict, that Oneida has recusal rules, and he had them right in front of him, and he was able to verify those. And those are all of that information is on the Internet available to the public. So those were a couple of the ones that he gave examples of. The second issue I want to talk about is this discussion that was brought up about by Justice Prosser about whether the rule applies to which tribes, and there was some discussion about Potawatomi and Oneida. And Potawatomi and Oneida are in very different situations. The Potawatomi 4D Child Support Agency was established, I believe, in about 2000. It's a very well-established program, relatively speaking. And they did have many transfers that occurred before this rule came about. The other factor that's very different between Potawatomi and Oneida is Potawatomi has about 1,500 members. Oneida has about 15,000. So I actually spoke to the Forest County Potawatomi Tribal Child Support Director when we were getting ready for this process. And because their program is so well established and she has relationships with the other 4D directors in her region, when a tribal person comes in to make an application, it doesn't even hardly get started. The directors all refer them to the tribal child support agencies, and now I think in the 95% of the cases are originating in Forest County Potawatomi Tribal Court. So there are no transfers. Or they're, I mean, you could call it a transfer, but it's a referral. It's not really a transfer. And I expect once these backlog of cases from Oneida get through, that will be more and more the case. When the programs are better established, the other 4D directors in the counties learn the tribal names. They know the people at the tribal 4D agency. They have a relationship. There's trust built there. There's a relationship there. And then when those applications come in, they'll just make the referral, and it won't ever start in circuit court. So I think that explains part of maybe the differences there, I hope. The third thing I wanted to address was Justice Rogensack was asking about, well, couldn't we just make this consensual? And Judge Whitefish had mentioned the case about the guardianship, and I think modesty prevented him from really maybe delving into the details of that case. which was a Potawatomi elder, and this was in the winter of 08-09. It actually went right over the rule. The rule started January 1st of 09. And in the winter of 08, this elder was doing things that were not in her best interest, walking out on the road without a coat and some things like that. And there was a lot of concern from everyone. And it started that Forest County, the county government, instituted an action in Forest County Circuit Court for the welfare of this elder. And the family got wind of it, and one of the attorneys for the tribe got wind of it, and brought then a similar action in tribal court. This proceeding actually sort of commenced as a Teague-type situation. There were parallel cases, in fact. But then Judge Stenz brought his court reporter over to the tribal courts, and everyone was in the room, the county service providers, the family, the ward, an attorney appointed by the tribal court for the ward, the tribal social service people, Judge Stenz, Judge Whitefish, both clerks, and the state court reporter. And they had a big hearing. And there was a lot of good education that came about. And the one thing that occurred to me that might be a problem with only consensual is that that hearing might not have happened if it had been a consensual only. But I think then once the county people and everyone came together, sort of saw what the situation was, everyone realized they were working in the best interest of this elder, and then that became clear right away. I'm not sure that would have happened in a consensual-only situation. It might have, but I can imagine situations where a county might, for whatever reason, just dig in its heels and say, well, we're not going to discuss it. We're going forward with our mission or whatever is the case. So it seems like that, at least, would be one good benefit of retaining this aspect of the rule of allowing everyone to get together. And then that really ended up being a consensual sort of situation. I mean, Judge Stenz and Judge Whitefish really conferred, and then Judge Stenz said, well, I'm transferring the case, or I'm putting a stay on
mine. When I look at consensual, I look at the parties, not the court.
Yeah, well, then I was going to say, so really the county, too, by the end, the county people were to a point, I think, of consenting, but they weren't in the beginning. So I just raised that as an anecdote that may be helpful.
Any questions of Mr. Stenzel? Thank you,
okay,
counsel. Is there anyone from the Department of Children and Families who would like to cast some light now that I've asked? How are you?
Good morning, Chief Justice Abrahamson and other justices. I'm Connie Chesnick, and I'm legal counsel for the State Child Support Program. And I can just try to address some of the questions that you raised, Justice Prosser. The Child Support Program is a federally funded program, but not all of the tribes operate child support programs. They basically have to apply for child support funding. And in Wisconsin, there are only four tribes that currently operate programs, the Oneida, the Lac du Flambeau, the Menominee, and the Forest County Potawatomi. It's my understanding the Lac-Couturier just received startup funding, and we will be working with them because they will be subject to this rule. And it's my understanding that the Ho-Chunk are also in the process of submitting an application. So when those tribes do receive funding, we will work with them on transferring cases under this rule. But as has been noted, the other tribes completed their process prior to the promulgation of this rule. It was mentioned earlier that there were roughly 4,000 cases in Brown County. The 4,000 actually referred to the number of cases statewide in which there are Oneida members that are living throughout the state. We started with Brown County because they had the bulk of the cases, and we will move, as Lisa noted, to Outagamie next and then to the balance of state. With respect to the child support program itself, the way that program operates is we receive federal funding to operate the program. The program is actually administered in the counties. There are two ways to become a part of the child support program. Either you receive public assistance, in which case there is a referral made to the child support program, and Lisa referred to that, or you come in and apply for our services. There's no fee. You can go into a child support agency in any county and apply for services. Those are the cases that we would be working with the tribe to transfer. Private cases are outside of the child support program if they are not receiving our services. They're just receiving the services of a private attorney. In those cases, would not be eligible for transfer unless they became a child support case.
Now, when you talk about a child support case, the 4D program, as I understand it, is for folks that have a child support order but aren't paying child support, and services are being provided from the county, so maybe special services to the family and counseling or some other way, and then it's noticed that there are not appropriate child support payments coming in, and that's when a 4D action has begun to try to collect on those child support. Is that correct?
That's true, but we will only do enforcement in cases where the parties either are receiving public assistance or they've applied for our services.
Yeah.
So you could have a private matter where sure. there's $10,000 in arrearages, let's say. They right. haven't applied for our services.
Right.
That case is not one that we would be working to transfer to the tribe.
Right, so if someone, Mary and John, had a divorce and John wasn't paying support, but Mary was supporting the family, and no request for services from the county was requested, then it doesn't ever come within what you'd be considering, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, okay,
thank you.
Unless
the parties on their own wish to have the case transferred.
I'd like clarification on what you mean by apply for our services. Do you mean by that have applied for county services on parenting or assistance in transportation? Or do you mean by applied for our services, come to us, because they have a child support order that isn't being complied with, and they're asking for our administrative legal services to enforce it?
The latter. They That's come in and I, apply yeah. to a county child support yeah. agency for assistance in enforcing the child support order.
That's exactly it. So, sometimes with people that can't afford attorneys, that can't afford to go for hire a private attorney, and don't want to come in representing themselves, by themselves, even though they are not getting public assistance, they can come to the child support agency and ask for assistance in enforcement of the child support order.
Yes. Yes. It's not necessarily always individuals who can't afford the services of a private attorney. There are many services available through the child support program that are not available through private attorneys.
Yes. And so, I didn't mean it. You're absolutely correct. I mean, oftentimes people will go and hire their own attorney, though, and come back for
yes.
all these post-divorce
They may have
stuff.
Both. Yeah, they may right. have a private attorney and also be receiving our services.
So and then the support order is the order that we're talking about, and that's like a judgment.
Yes, it is a court order.
Post-judgment, post-court order.
Yes.
Should this rule be amended in any way?
Not that it has been working well. We have not had any issues with it, so at this time we don't see the need for any amendment. I guess the last thing I would note, you had mentioned, Justice Prosser, you questioned the 81 cases that were withdrawn. They were withdrawn mutually, an agreement between the tribe and the child support agency, because there's a provision in the tribal ordinance with respect to cases where one of the party objecting is not a tribal member and also does not live on the reservation. Under their ordinance, they cannot exercise jurisdiction without their consent, so those cases were withdrawn. When the database is run, if we get an objection, we will look to see if the person objecting is a tribal member and whether or not they live on the reservation. And if it's determined that neither of those apply, the case is withdrawn for transfer.
So if what you're saying, I think I understood you. What you're saying, if a case goes to tribal court, and one of the parties is either non-Indian or a member of a different tribe, and they object, it goes?
No, I'm saying if the case is identified for a potential transfer, and we send out the notice of intent to transfer, and one of the parties objects to the transfer, before it ever goes to hearing, we will look to determine whether or not that individual lives on the reservation or is a member of the tribe. And if neither apply, we withdraw the notice of intent to transfer, and it never goes to a hearing, and the case remains in state court.
So if one is a member of the tribe and one isn't, tribe doesn't take it?
Only if they non-tribal member does not live on the reservation.
Okay. So if you're not a member and you live on the reservation, then the tribal court works for you or can take the case.
Yes.
But if you're not a member and you don't live on the reservation, the tribal court does not exercise jurisdiction.
If a party would object to the transfer.
If they object. Okay.
Yes.
I'm a little confused by your explanation. We have 644, this is from the letter from Judge Towns, 644 cases in which a motion to transfer was made. Is that motion to transfer made by the circuit court judge?
Well, it's initiated by the child support agency. They would file the motion with the circuit court judge. And the circuit court judge would then hear any objections.
Okay. Well, now, I'm interested in that. Is the child support agency a party?
Yes. We are a real party in interest because the case is receiving the services of the federal child support program.
Are they a named party?
We are only in some paternity cases we would be. In a private divorce, we are a real party in interest. We're not a named party. Our standing derives from their receipt of our services. That's why in a private matter where the parties have not applied for our services, we would not have standing to seek transfer.
Should that be clarified? I would not have assumed that the child support agency was a party. For example, in the forms that we developed, there is that Form A. Where is it here? There's a petitioner and there's a respondent. Where does the child support agency fit in petitioner and respondent?
Well, we are not representing either party. Our attorneys represent the interests of the state, and the state's interest is as a party in interest, which is statutory in cases where the parties have either applied for services or are receiving our services because of their receipt of public assistance.
Well, that's 767.205. Is that what your reference is? And that's in 2M, 801-54-2M, that in which a state is a real party in interest pursuant to 767-205-2. State is a real party in interest within the meaning of 803-01, purpose of establishing paternity, securing reimbursement of aid, future support, and costs.
Yes.
That's where you come in. As appropriate in an action affecting the family in any of the following circumstances, paternity, establish or enforce child support, aid under 48, various sections for dependent children or benefits.
Correct. I used to be able to cite to those statutes until they recodified Chapter 767, and
okay.
I guess I'm too old to remember all the new numbers now.
A real party, or maybe a real party interest, because you got an interest in the money.
Yes.
Either they pay up or you're going to pay up.
Yes.
So that's why your interest. I'm overstating this somewhat, crassly stating it.
In paternity cases, our interest is in establishing paternity and ensuring that there is another parent who's going to financially support that child.
And when you say your attorneys, who are you referring to?
The child support agency, the child support program is actually operated through county child support agencies, and each county has their own attorneys. In some instances, it may be the Corporation Council. In some instances, they contract with private attorneys, but they all have attorneys who represent the interest of the state in taking these cases to court to establish paternity and establish and enforce child support orders.
As I understand it, in Brown County, if we have one parent from the United Nation, well, if we have two parents from the United Nation, they find out about this, there could very well be a referral to tribal court before it ever goes to circuit court.
That's correct.
Suppose we have one member of the United Nations and the other person is a member of the Menominee tribal nation. What does the Child Support Agency do then?
Well, my understanding, and I'm probably not the best person to address this, but my understanding is that the tribes are very good about working that out between themselves. They have a very good working relationship among the tribes to determine which one is the most appropriate to handle that case. And at the state level, we don't worry about that.
Now, suppose there is a member of the United Nations and a non-Indian.
In terms of whether or not the pre-judgment or post-judgment?
Pre-judgment.
Pre-judgment, I think it's a question of which party approaches which court first. If the tribe, for example, the United Nations does have a divorce ordinance, and if one of the parties chose to file for divorce in the United Nations, they would hear it.
Now, if we were talking about a member of the United Nations and a member of Ho-Chunk tribe, where there isn't an existing program, what about then?
Well, again, I guess if one of the parties, you're talking prejudgment,
yeah,
chose to file a divorce in the Oneida Nation, I am assuming that the Oneida Nation would hear that divorce. And if the same thing, if they chose to do it, assuming that the Ho-Chunk had the appropriate laws in place, chose to go to the Ho-Chunk Nation, the same would be true. In neither case, if they started it in either the Ho-Chunk or the United Nations, the state would not be involved in it at all. So it would be between the two tribes in terms of which court would exercise its jurisdiction.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Well, I appreciate your appearing, and I appreciate your commenting and helping us out to understand this. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Are there any other appearances relating to the courts seeking information about how 07-11 has been operating? Judge?
Hello, my name's Todd Matha. I'm the Chief Judge with Ho-Chunk Nation. I sort of felt compelled to speak since tribes come up a couple times. So I had been asked informally by our Wisconsin Tribal Judges Association president to offer some remarks, but I declined to do so in that we have not received any requests for discretionary transfer at Ho-Chunk. So I didn't feel that I could offer anything practically, but any remarks that I might have would just be theoretically. And it's in that latter vein that I wish to offer some remarks. It had come up, I believe Justice Rogensack had mentioned rights and what rights are available in the tribal setting. And that's been echoed again by some of the other justices and perhaps through some of the comments. The rights that the individuals are entitled to in the tribal setting are set forth in federal law, and that being the Indian Civil Rights Act. So when we're dealing with civil matters that are brought before the trial court, the rights that are most applicable and are most often addressed by both parties as well as the court are the Due Process Clause and the Equal Protection Clause. Are the laws being applied consistently? Are the individuals being afforded a meaningful opportunity to be heard? And I can say without equivocation within the Ho-Chunk setting that both of those rights are adhered to. The court, the Ho-Chunk Nation Court, looks to both of those terms that have been taken from the U.S. Constitution, find their ways in the state constitution, and ultimately wound up in the Indian Civil Rights Act as principles and doctrines that have a well-understood meaning within the legal context outside of the tribal setting. So when we have an issue of equal protection brought before us or a due process charge, We look to those federal precedents. We look to the state precedents. We look at them as persuasive, not binding. The U.S. Supreme Court has indicated that the Indian civil rights protections do not share in the same measure as do those that exist within the U.S. Constitution, but they also don't exist in a vacuum. And so when we look at them at Ho-Chunk and when we prepare trainings for our sister courts within the state of Wisconsin, we always reference federal law as well as case law within the state courts for bringing life to those concepts. Because a lay individual or a tribal individual approaching those concepts without that greater understanding of federal case law wouldn't really be able to ascertain, well, what do these things mean? But when we have due process, for instance, in the tribal setting, not only do we apply that those minimum standards that have been articulated within the federal case law, but we also bring a Ho-Chunk case law or a Ho-Chunk tradition and custom to bear on those principles. And in that instance, the due process clause at Ho-Chunk is more vital than that, in my perspective, from that which exists within the state court and within the federal court, because the Ho-Chunk courts offer more due process than do the sister courts. We find this in the employment context. We find it in the juvenile context. For instance, an individual at Ho-Chunk, if they're in a layoff situation, have due process rights. That isn't necessarily the case within our state courts or our federal courts, where the property interest would only be attached if there was a termination. In our juvenile setting, if we have a non-member that is involved within a guardianship case which is not bound by the Indian Child Welfare Act, we will afford non-members an attorney, even though it isn't a right that's afforded under Ho-Chunk law, or for that matter, any other law. But under Ho-Chunk law, one has a right to counsel of their own choice and at their own expense. And at Ho-Chunk, the legislature has entered into a contract with Wisconsin Judicare so that a member of the nation can receive those services if they meet that threshold level of indigency as established by the federal government, and we do not account for per capita payments. So it's poverty level plus $12,000. So when we have an individual that is a non-member that comes to appear before us, and he meets that same threshold, which again is greater than you would find in the state or federal system, we will appoint him counsel at the cost of the court. And we do this routinely. I have never had an individual appear before me, even if they brought up or perhaps reserved a right to object on personal jurisdiction grounds, did they actually follow through with that? It has never happened. It hasn't happened before me. It hasn't happened before any of the judges at Ho-Chunk, because those rights are afforded as required under federal law, and as I believe at Ho-Chunk, and perhaps the same with some of my sister courts within the state of Wisconsin, tribal courts, they receive a greater measure of protection for due process, for equal protection, for those some of those doctrines that exist outside, but also have elements of tradition and custom added to them when they come into the tribal setting. So that's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you very much, Judge. It's good seeing you again. Are there any other comments? If not, the hearing on rules, petition 0711, this information hearing in the matter of review of WSSTAT 80154, discretionary transfer of cases to the tribal court, is closed. It's 12:20, if I'm reading the clock right, and the court will take a recess for lunch. How about 1:45 back? How's that? We will reconvene at 1:45. We will then discuss what the court has heard, but this is just for an information hearing. And we will then go to a rules petition 0908,
which deals with bar dues, and up before the court is a draft order to hold this petition in abeyance pending completion of the federal litigation. We'll then move to a draft order relating to e-discovery, 0901, which is a draft that is circulated to the court for approval on meet and confer. And then our last item is discussion of ethics issues, possibly relating to researching e-file briefs in other cases. So that's our agenda for the afternoon when we will meet in open administrative conference. See you all at 1:45.